it 100%, sir.
Good. Begin a step back in random percentages of power. Randomize from 7. When you hit 75%, cut to 50. When the salvos slacken, go down to 20, then 5, then 0.
Kirtan felt fear trickle through his guts.
You are confident they won't level this place? They took Bladette down to the foundations.
Which is why we are below the foundations, Agent Lore.
Kirtan cringed as a particularly powerful blast shook the ground.
I trust you know what you are doing.
As you have no choice. I appreciate your confidence.
Derricote rubbed his hands together.
The rebels want this place to use for future operations. That's the only reason they're attacking. If they want it, they're going to have to pay my price to get it.
Whistler's squawk made Corrin focus on the tactical screen. The shields over the base had begun to contract. As they began to come down, the Emancipator slackened off with turbolaser fire and concentrated on using the ion cannons. While they did slightly less damage than the lasers, if the shields came down unexpectedly quickly, an ion salvo wouldn't destroy what General Crepay intended to capture. Corrin brought his X-Wing in beside Warden's squadron and killed his thrust. Three flights, on station!
I copy, Nod. Stand by.
Tycho's voice clicked off abruptly as the flight controller switched channels. Corrin flipped his comm unit over to the tactical frequency he shared with his flight. They still had not gotten a pilot to replace Lu Jane, so three flight remained one pilot light. That was just one element of the operation that Corrin didn't like. He knew pilots were not easy to come by, but he knew Tycho could have easily flown Lu Jane's X-Wing. And he thought the man would be a lot more valuable in a fighter than inside the Iridane directing traffic.
10, 12, we hold here.
Corrin glanced at his tactical screen.
Their shields are failing fast. We'll be going in next.
Whistler's triumphant bleat heralded the collapse of Black Moon's shields. Corrin started to smile. Something nagged at the back of his brain. He couldn't identify it, but it nibbled away at his smile and started bile burning in the back of his throat. He keyed his comm.
Control, 9 still shows the enemy to be blind.
Got it, 9. Rogues, stand by.
An uncharacteristic hesitancy echoed through Tycho's words.
Rogues, this is direct from General Crepay. You will escort the assault shuttles down to the planet.
Say again, Control?
The disbelief in Wedge's voice resonated through Corrin.
Defender Wing is ready for its sweep.
Rogue Leader, Crepay sees that as an unnecessary delay. Y-Wings have been ordered home. You are to escort his shuttles in. Resistance on the planet is ended.
Control, what about the ion cannons?
If they could have shot, they would have done so by now.
General Crepay's voice growled through the comm channels.
Resistance is ended. It is time to claim our prize.
Static punctuated the silence that followed Crepay's declaration. Then Wedge came back on the frequency.
Rogue Leader to Rogue Squadron. Form up to screen the escorts.
Corrin's stomach flip-flopped.
I don't like this.
9, this channel is for military use, not opinions. Let's save the commentary for the debriefing.
Wedge's voice lost some of its edge as he continued to speak.
And let's fly well enough that there is a debriefing.
That's my intention, Rogue Leader.
Corrin eased his throttle forward and hit a switch.
S-foils in attack position.
The Emancipator rose away from the planet, taking up a position so it could screen the force from any interloping Imperials. Corrin felt even more naked as it withdrew. While the Star Destroyer was not built to deal with starfighters, its overwhelming firepower could interdict TIEs and perhaps even destroy their launching facilities on the ground. Of course, Crepay would forbid them from doing that, since he wants the real estate intact. Corrin's sense of unease grew as he closed with the boxy assault shuttles dropping away from the Kurilag. The 8 shuttles each carried 40 commandos and would make 3 round trips between the planet and the Kurilag to bring the whole force down. Though they were slow, the shuttles were sufficiently armed to hold Ties at bay long enough so the rogues could pick them off. His tactical screen still showed nothing in terms of fighter opposition. The base's shields were down. The operation seemed to be going better than expected. And that realization started a cold chill working up Corrin's spine. He knew it was silly for him to feel fear when everything seemed normal, but part of him couldn't accept the good fortune. His left hand pressed unconsciously to the medallion he wore. Things were going this perfectly when my father died. We anticipated trouble, found none, and I relaxed. He died because I relaxed. I watched it happen, and I did nothing. I didn't see it coming, but it did, just like it will here. What is wrong here? The answer to the question came to him a nanosecond before the first Azure Ion bolt lanced up from the ground and hit the first assault shuttle. The blue energy snared the Modaran and enmeshed it in a web of electrical discharges. Flashes of silvery light marked explosions in the weapon systems and engines. With smoke pouring from a dozen hatches, the shuttle began a slow, rolling tumble through the atmosphere and the ground below. It never hit the planet. A full kilometer above the ground, it crashed into a renewed energy shield. The shuttle exploded. Bits of debris struck sparks from the shield as they skipped across its surface. Whistler wailed out a warning. The tactical screen showed multiple fighter contacts heading up out of launch tunnels around the shield dome perimeter. It also reported that while the shield had grown no larger in diameter, its power level was 200% higher than before. Easily half again more powerful than possible, given the power generation estimates in the briefings. All that and ion cannons too?
Control,
Wedge ordered.
Pull the transports out now! Rogue Leader, you have multiple fighters. 2 squadrons, Eyeballs and Squints. Got them, Control. Rogue Squadron, keep the imps off the shuttles.
Corrin shook his head. 7 shuttles, 2 dozen imps, and 11 X-Wings? Piece of rice cakes. Whistler's mournful keen matched Corrin's feelings more than his words. He keyed his call. 3 flight, hang together. Squints are coming our way.
Oral has them, mine.
And Dorney likewise reported in.
12 has acquired targets.
Corrin punched up a graph and had it overlaid on the track of the incoming interceptors. Coming at us rather obliquely. Their funeral. 3 flight, switch to proton torpedoes and lock a target in. If they want to play... Ooh! A trio of ion blasts shot up from the planet's surface. One sliced in at 3 flight, cutting through the vector the squints should have been using to engage the X-Wings. The second hit the Emancipator and played out over it like a thunderstorm on a prairie. The third lanced up at one of the shuttles, but never reached its target. Corrin saw the blast diffuse ever so slightly, as if it had hit a shield, but its dissipating ball left no debris behind.
2, report.
Dead air, answered Wedge's call. Rogue Leader, we have no contact with Rogue 2.
Damn. Pesk caught that one. He's gone.
Full evasive, Rogues. Control, get the shuttles dancing.
Stay alert, 3 flight.
Corrin's aiming reticle went red, and a target lock tone filled his ears. He tightened on the trigger and launched a torpedo at an approaching interceptor. Switching to lasers, he linked all 4, then picked another target. As his torpedo hit the first, he flashed into range on the second and let it have a full burst of laser fire. The glare of lasers against his shields hid the results of his shooting, but Whistler reported 1 interceptor destroyed and another damaged. In seconds, he shot past the line of interceptors, then hauled back on his stick, rolled, and dove back in at them. The squints, reduced from 8 to 6, split up into flight elements, and moved to engage single X-wings. As two started to circle around toward them, Corrin inverted, dove, and came back up and around to go head-to-head with them. He boosted power to his forward shields, and pulled a snap roll that stood the X-wing on its port escort. That narrowed his profile, and allowed the first volley of laser fire from the squints to pass on either side of himself. At the last second, he selected a proton torpedo and let it fly at point-blank range. Even though it never got a solid target lock, it nailed the lead TIE dead on and tore it apart. Corrin nudged the stick and shot through the center of the fiery explosion. Clear on the other side, he lost the interceptor's wingman. But a more immediate problem captured his attention. 12! Break to port, now! And Dorney's X-Wing juked left, but the squint riding her exhaust stayed with her. Break harder, 12! Climb!
Not do. Lateral stabilizer gone.
Weave, 12! The Rodian started her X-Wing in a corkscrew maneuver, and the interceptor's first shots went wide of their mark. Then the aft end of the ship came back around, and the squint's fire ripped up through the engines. Fire blossomed on the right side of the ship, shredding the S-foils. A second later, the whole fighter shook, and its skin split from the inside out. Argent flames burst free, converting the ship into a miniature sun. Then the roiling ball of gas collapsed into its own black hole. Bloodlessly, Corrin vaped Andorny's killer. Part of him wanted to cheer at having exacted revenge for her, but he overrode those emotions. He could no more allow himself to luxuriate in the death of an imp than he could afford to mourn his comrade. There would be time for that later. If there is a later. Anything that distracted him from the job at hand would kill him. So he pushed it all away and concentrated on the battle around him.
Three flight. Shuttle Devonian has four interceptors inbound.
Oral copies, Control. Oral has them.
I'm on your back door, Ten. The interceptors have reformed into two flights and had selected one of the assault shuttles as a target. Oral brought his X-Wing in behind the lead pair and throttled back to match their speed.
Oral using torpedoes.
Shoot straight, Ten. The TIEs broke formation and split out in four directions. Ten, go to lasers! They must have lock threat warning systems. A fighter with that equipment would provide the pilot with an indicator light when another ship had a torpedo lock on him. By jinking sharply, it was possible to break the lock before the torpedo was launched. The interceptor pilots ahead of them clearly knew their business. Only very good pilots survived to become veterans in TIEs, making them far deadlier than the pilots the rogues had yet faced. Corrin rolled the X-Wing up on the starboard stabilizers and started the long turn that would bring him in behind one of the squints. Whistler anxiously hooted a warning about another interceptor moving to swing onto Corrin's tail. But the pilot did nothing to lose the fighter. He pressed his attack, sharpening the arc of his turn to trim distance from his target. Whistler became more insistent, and Corrin smiled. Kill thrust. As the droid complied with the order, Corrin punched the right rudder pedal with his foot. That swung the aft end of the ship up, a maneuver that further corrected his course for the ship in front of him. It also provided a tantalizing broadside shot for the squint following him. Counter thrust, now! Whistler brought the engines back up to power as the X-Wing's aft completed its 180-degree arc. The engines thrust against the line of the ship's flight, effectively killing its momentum and, for a split second, freezing it in space. For the barest of moments, it lay dead in the sights of the interceptor. But the interceptor pilot had already begun his roll and turn to keep his guns trained on where the X-Wing should have been. Corrin feathered his left rudder pedal and tracked the nose of his fighter along the squint's flight path. The quad lasers loosed two bursts of red darts that perforated the port wing and stabbed through the cockpit. The interceptor slowly spiraled out of control. More ion bursts from the planet coursed through the dogfight. The Emancipator took two more hits, and the Mon Vali took another. Corrin didn't see any more fighters get hit, nor shuttles, but a string of green laser bolts slicing across his flight path distracted him.
Oro, hit!
Corrin punched the throttle and whipped the X-Wing up and over in time to see his wingman's ship break apart. Oral! The X-Wing disintegrated. The engine pod spun off in different directions, and the cockpit canopy exploded into a million glittering fragments. He saw Oral float free of the stricken ship and saw the Gand wave his arms. Corrin hoped it was more than random reflex. Then a piece of the fighter's S-foils sliced through the pilot's right arm, taking it off above the elbow. The body began to tumble through space, but it remained otherwise unmoving. Control, 10 is extra vehicle. Get someone down here to get him.
9, Emancipator reports the zone is too hot for rescue operations.
Convince them, Control! Wedge's voice came onto the frequency.
Control, I have 3 and 8, EV. We need help here.
I'm on it, Rogue Leader. It'll be done.
3 and 8? That's Numara and Arisi. 2 dead, and 3 more out of the fight. A new voice came through Corrin's headset.
Control here, Rogues. Good news, your rescue's on the way. Bad news, we have 2 squadrons of squints coming in from Planetary North. ETA, 2 minutes. Shuttles are heading to hyperspace now.
Corrin watched as the assault shuttles started the runs to light speed. The Korilag had already vanished, as had the Y-Wings, leading the way out of disaster. 2 ion blasts caught the Monbale, stopping it dead in space. The Iridane was beginning to move, and the Emancipator had begun to drift toward Planetary North. But in doing so, oriented itself for entry into hyperspace, as if Admiral Ragab could not decide whether he was going to run or fight. Run! No reason to stick here. A sharp whistle from his astromech made Corrin invert his ship and dive. A pair of squints flashed past, then one exploded as Rogue 4 shot by on its tail.
Thanks, 4.
Thanks for playing bait, 9.
The remaining TIEs broke away and headed toward the incoming fighters flying over the planet's polar cap.
Do we pursue, Rogue Leader?
Negative. Screen our people until pickup.
Corrin keyed his comm.
Rogue Leader, 2 squadrons of squints against a half dozen of us is going to be ugly.
9, if you can't handle your 4, I'll take them.
Corrin ignored Roar's jibe.
Trim it, Rogues. We're here protecting our own.
Wedge's voice carried a confidence with it that buoyed Corrin's spirits.
Focus on your mission and let the rest take care of itself.
Control to Rogues. Squint ETA is 30 seconds. EV-3 is recovered.
Corrin smiled and looked up. In the distance, he could see the white triangular hull of the Forbidden motionless in space. The pilot had brought the ship in close to where Nawara Ven had been floating, then used a rescue tractor beam to pull the pilot inside the emergency hatch in the hull. The Corellian brought his X-Wing up and around, then flew toward where Oral hung in space.
10 is here, Forbidden.
Thanks, 9. I have the coordinates. On my way.
Corrin blinked. That's Tycho's voice.
Cap? Is that you?
Guilty, 10. You have 4 squints closing on your position. Deal with them before I get there, please.
You got it. Corrin shivered. The only thing he could think of that was more stupid than engaging 4 interceptors with a single X-Wing was flying an unarmed shuttle into a hot zone to pick up pilots. A smile slowly crept across his face.
It's only stupid if we die doing it. Otherwise, it's heroism. And I can be a hero today.
Corrin jumped his throttle full forward and shunted laser energy into his engines. That pushed his speed up toward maximum. Adjusting the stick and tapping the pedals, he made his ship jump, cut, and dive. He flipped his weapons over to torpedoes and tried to get a lock on the lead squint, but it juked out of his sights. The others took shots at him, but his evasive maneuvers made them miss. His fighter flew past them, and two of the interceptors started loops to come after him. Their turns took them high and away as they throttled up to match his speed. Increasing their speed meant their loops became wider than they might have preferred. They outnumber us enough that being a bit sloppy can't hurt. Corrin chopped his throttle back to half and pulled his X-Wing through a tight turn. Forbidden, paint one with a missile lock! Punching the throttle full forward, Corrin shot his ship back along the vector that had carried him through the squint formation. One of the interceptors broke off on its run at the shuttle, so Corrin concentrated on the other. He centered the ship in his aiming reticle and waited until he got a missile lock. When the reticle turned red, he hit the trigger and sent a proton torpedo speeding out toward the interceptor. The interceptor pilot juked up and starboard, which pulled him out of the shuttle's forward firing arc. While that maneuver would have carried him away from any torpedo the shuttle had launched, Corrin's missile had to make little more than a minor course correction before it hit. The torpedo cored through the interceptor's ball and exploded, spitting shrapnel out in all directions from an incandescent cloud. Knowing he was pushing his luck, Corrin rolled the X-Wing and dove after the first interceptor the Forbidden had scared off. Throttling back, he tightened a turn and came up inside the arc of the squint's loop. With a flick of his thumb, he snapped weapons control over to lasers. The squint began to juke and twist, but Corrin stayed with him. Whistler screeched a warning about the return of the other two interceptors, but Corrin ignored it. He triggered one burst of lasers and clipped one of the squint's wings, but it sailed on. Pushing more power to his engines, Corrin started to close with it, but the astromech whistled insistently at him. The pair of interceptors had closed to inside a kilometer and were firmly on his tail. Nine here. I could use some help.
I'm on it, Nine. 10 on the way. Break to port on my mark.
10? That's oral, but not his voice. What's going on?
Mark!
Left rudder, then a snap roll onto the port stabilizers pulled him wide out of his previous flight path. He saw blue bolts shoot back toward the ships following him, and for a half second, Corrin felt utterly disoriented. Blue beams meant ion cannon shots, but the planet had been behind him, not in front of him. And the ion cannons on the ground wouldn't be shooting at TIEs in any event.
You're clear, Nine.
Corrin brought his ship around. Suddenly, everything became clearer. Defender Wing's Y-Wings dove and climbed through the dogfight, blasting away at interceptors with wild abandon. What the slow ships lacked in grace, they made up for in sheer firepower. Their entry into the fight destroyed or disabled a half dozen interceptors.
They're running!
Psalm's voice came through the calm.
No celebrations! With them clear, the ion cannons will open up again.
Forbidden to control. I have all EV pilots.
Forbidden, you are clear to hyperspace.
Four ion blasts from the planet stabbed up and again struck them on volley. The modified bulk cruiser began to break apart. Escape pods shot out from around the bridge and away into space, while the rest of the ship began to slowly drift back down toward Black Moon. I hope it hits the installation.
Control to all fighters. You are clear to hyperspace.
Control, does Iriday need cover for getting the escape pods?
Negative, Rogue Leader. They're on our way out, and the interceptors are heading home.
Thanks, Control.
Wedge's voice seemed filled with weariness.
Back to base for us, Rogues.
Got it, Rogue Leader. Corrin took one last look at Blackman, then pointed his fighter toward the stars. Back to base for most of us, he means, Whistler. 2 months of prep, and in 10 minutes, the squadron is cut in half. Someone made some very bad mistakes here, and our friends paid for them. Never again. Twenty-seven. Corrin stared out the window of the Noquivzor Base Recreation Center. Rolling hills and treeless plains stretched out for kilometers in all directions from the building. Gentle and warm breezes washed in waves over the golden grasses and tickled the back of his neck. If Irisi weren't over in the med center, floating in her family's finest stock, I'd take run a long walk out there and just enjoy the countryside. As beautiful as it is, though, it's hard to think of enjoying anything right now. He forced himself to smile as a man in an infantry uniform set a mug of lum down on the table in front of him. "Thanks, Lieutenant."
The man nodded.
"Call me Paige."
Corin shoved the chair on the other side of the table out toward Paige.
"What's the lum for?"
"Drinking, usually."
Paige sat.
"Me and my people were on the Devonian. You and your wingman scattered the squints coming in our direction. We owe you."
The pilot lifted the mug and drank a mouthful of the fiery ale and let it burn its way down his throat.
"I appreciate the drink, but you'll have to buy one for Oral when he comes out of his back to dip."
Paige nodded.
"Gladly. How badly was he hit?"
"Lost half his right arm. The suit shut down around the wound, so he didn't suffocate. But he got very cold."
Corin put the frosted mug down and shivered.
"Backed us for exposure. All the EV pilots are getting a dunking, though none of them are as bad off as Oral. The MDs don't know about prosthetics for him. They've never done GANs before, and don't have appropriate limbs to use for replacements."
"Rogue Squadron got hit hard."
"Two pilots dead. Three EV. And one was flying wounded."
"I heard about him. The Shistovanin."
"Very tough individual."
Corin nodded.
"Shiel wasn't going to report for medical care, but Gavin forced him to go. Net result, we're at 2/3 strength. But only if we can find X-Wings to replace the ones we lost. If not, we're below 50%.
The infantry officer looked around the crowded, above-ground pavilion, then leaned forward and lowered his voice.
"This mission was vape bait from before Crefay ordered the Y-Wings home."
"No kidding."
The pilot glowered at the mug.
"About a second before the cannons took the Moderan apart, I realized that just because the cannons hadn't shot didn't mean they couldn't shoot."
"That occurred to all of us, I think. Except for General Crefay. He was blind to that possibility."
Paige shook his head.
"We all knew he wanted Black Moon so the Council would give him command of the Coruscant invasion. In 3 weeks, the planet's orbit takes it through an annual meteor shower. I wanted to use that as cover to bring my commandos in and do a ground recon of the base. We would have taken the ion cannons down."
"That makes sense. Why didn't he approve it?"
"The world's only moon, the Black Moon that gave the system its code name, would be in our entry and exit vector. It would act as a natural interdictor cruiser, which would make things a lot more dangerous."
Corin shrugged.
"The ion cannons made things dangerous enough, thanks."
"No kidding."
Paige smiled.
"We would have taken them down. And we would have found the base for those squint squadrons that came in late to the fight."
"The Bothans didn't even know they were there."
The infantryman winced.
"And they should have. They're very good at worming their way into Imperial networks."
"So this time they failed."
Corin hesitated as an idea occurred to him.
"Or records of those forces aren't part of the official garrison."
Paige frowned.
"What do you mean?"
"Working with Corsec, I was involved in a sweep of smugglers' headquarters. She was very sharp, and had always distanced herself from Glitterstim stores, so we couldn't pin anything on her. This one time, though, we found a couple of kilos of Glitterstim in a warehouse she owned. She said she knew nothing about it, and accused us of planting it. Turned out that she didn't know anything about it. The Glitterstim had been skimmed from shipments by one of her aides, and hidden there until he could find a way to move it himself."
"You're saying the Empire doesn't know those interceptors were there?"
A squadron is a rounding error for Imperial bookkeepers. Corrin leaned forward, resting his elbows on the table. And the Bothans didn't know about whatever power source was used to boost the shields back up after we took them down. Whoever is in charge of wherever Black Moon is might be running some operation his Imperial masters know nothing about.
Page nodded slowly. The data on the covert operation is kept away from the Imperials, so the Bothans had no way of discovering it.
Not without being on the ground.
We had intel on the Vizlite from the galaxy, but we got jumped by the IR and UV.
Page rapped his knuckles on the plasteel tabletop.
If we'd been given proper background on Black Moon, we might have been able to guess at the kind of information we really needed.
I understand the need for operational security. But you can bet now the true location of Black Moon won't be declassified until we're all dead and gone.
Page nodded. Still, the simulations of an assault are only as good as the databases from which they are constructed. Bad intel gets people killed.
Corrin ran a hand over his face.
Well, now we have an inkling of what we don't know about Black Moon.
At least two squint squadrons and a power generator are hidden there somewhere. Hidden from us and imp officials.
The information in the official Imperial survey files is clearly useless.
Right. And that means... The chirp of the comlink on the table cut off Corrin's comment. He picked it up and opened the channel. Horn here.
Entry here, sir.
Something wrong with Oral?
No, sir.
Is Arisi coming out of the Bacta?
No, sir.
Corrin frowned. Then why did you call me?
Sir, Whistler asked me to inform you he has completed the calculations of the wind currents you requested.
Wind currents?
On Black Moon, sir. He said he has found some very interesting things.
We'll be there in a second. Horn out. Corrin looked up at Page. It may be raising the shields after the base had been strafed, but I'm up for learning a little more about the world we just ran from. How about you?
I had friends on the Moderan. I didn't like seeing them die.
Good. Let's go. Corrin shot him a smile. Maybe, just maybe, we can find a way to go back in and make the imps pay. Wedge wasn't certain he had heard General Salm correctly.
Did you just say it was just as well that we failed to take Black Moon?
Salm nodded slowly and pointed with a glass of pale blue Abrax cognac at the data pad on his desk.
Intelligence reports that the Imperial Star Destroyer 2 Eviscerator left the Vanjaga system on a course that would have put it in at Black Moon within 6 hours after we launched our operation. Its six squadrons of TIEs would have matched our fighters, and the Eviscerator would have pounded on the Emancipator. Chances are very good we would have lost our strike force and Black Moon.
The Corellian's jaw dropped.
The mission was a go with an Imp Star Deuce within 6 hours of the target? How did that happen?
I don't know. Iceheart has been shifting some resources around, and some admirals moved them even further to avoid her control. It could be the Eviscerator was moved at random.
Wedge frowned.
Or Iceheart anticipated where we were likely to strike.
Or, Salm looked at Wedge over the rim of his glass, someone told Iceheart where we were going to be.
Tycho was in the dark about our destination, as the rest of us were, and he was out there without any lasers or torps pulling in EV pilots.
Salm held up his open hand.
Easy, Commander. I wasn't accusing your XO. I don't trust him, but I know he was innocent this time.
You checked the monitor logs on him?
I checked the logs on everyone. There were more call-outs than I like, but nothing incriminating. Now, I didn't know where we were going before we pulled out, so I assume no one else did.
but there are always leaks. The general set his cognac on his desk, then walked over to the small bar in the corner of his quarters. Would you like a drink, Commander Antilles?
I prefer it if you call me Wedge.
The smaller man seemed to consider that for a moment. Then he nodded.
Very well, Wedge. A drink? How old is the Abrax?
Psalm smiled.
I don't know. My aide obtained it from the black market, so your guess is as good as mine. The bottle does have Old Republic tax holograms on it, though.
Wedge shrugged.
I'll chance it, then. Thanks.
The general poured him a generous dollop of the aquamarine liquid.
Please, be seated.
The general's quarters were as sparsely furnished as his own, with munition cases and old ejection seats being about the best things available to use as tables and chairs. Psalm's liquor cabinet had been built out of a plasteel helmet case with foam inserts to keep glasses and two bottles safe. Wedge appropriated one of the ejection seats and raised his glass of cognac.
Thank you for coming to our rescue out there.
Defender Wing pays its debts.
Glasses clinked as they touched, and both men drank.
The liquor's spicy vapors opened up all of Wedge's nasal passages. He let the liquid pool on his tongue for a moment more, then swallowed it.
A warmth started in his belly and pulsed out to ease some of the fatigue in his limbs. The general hunched forward, cupping his glass in both hands.
I want to ask you what you intend to put in your report about what I did out there.
Wedge made no effort to cover his surprise.
You saved my unit. I thought I might recommend review for the Corellian Cross. Since I'm not your commanding officer, I can't put you in for it, but...
Psalm shook his head.
That's not what I'm talking about.
What then?
The man's brow furrowed.
I disobeyed a direct order to leave the system.
Wedge blinked in confusion.
If you had returned to the Mon Vali, your entire wing would have been killed.
We know that now, but we didn't know that at the time the order was given.
Psalm swirled the cognac around in his glass.
General Crefay and I often have been at odds with each other. You may have gathered that from the briefing. I felt when he ordered me out that he wanted to rob me of any credit for the operation. I started us on an outbound vector, but came in close to the Emancipator so I could claim its mass prevented us from making the jump to light speed. I didn't want to leave, and closing with the Star Destroyer made for a convenient excuse. But data feeds from the onboard computers will reveal the truth.
And so... you were in position so the Emancipator could screen you from ground sensors and the incoming squints.
Wedge shrugged.
If I'd been given that order and thought of that trick to let me stick around, that's what I would have done.
I know.
Psalm stood and began to pace.
That's the problem, Commander Antilles. What I did is exactly what you would have done.
It worked.
It doesn't matter that it worked. I'm not you. My people are not your people.
Psalm's face became a mask of frustration.
The only thing that keeps my people alive out there is rigid adherence to discipline. And this discipline is instilled through consciously constructed drills that build them into a unit. My people lack the native talent in your squadron. But we make up for it because we cover for one another and watch out for each other.
As you watched out for my people.
Yes, I did that. But only by disobeying an order from a superior officer. And you have to write it up that way.
Wedge shook his head.
I don't want to see you taking slugs for something that wasn't wrong.
But that's not up to you, Wedge. You can excuse something one of your pilots does, but only Akbar and the High Command can forgive me for this mutiny.
Psalm tossed off the last of his cognac.
So don't give the Admiral a single bite report. Tell him what happened.
What
and pretend I understand it? Wedge sat back in the padded chair. Interceptors came out of nowhere, and the base suddenly developed more power than even the worst case allowed. If the Eviscerator had showed up and dumped two wings worth of fighters into the battle, we would have lost all our ships. With the Star Destroyer 2 in the area, of course, Black Moon won't fall. You're probably right. Though the presence of an Imp Star Deuce is not insurmountable. Psalm splashed some more cognac into his glass. Stripped of their fighters, they are vulnerable to TRD. Wedge waved away a refill and smiled. TRD was Alliance slang for trench run disease, or the tactics that had destroyed the first Death Star. The Empire had developed Lancer-class frigates to prevent TRD from claiming any capital ships. While attacks by stub fighters had proved relatively insignificant in hurting Star Destroyers, TRD was something Imperial officers feared and took great pains to avoid. Fine. I'll head out with my half-dozen pilots, and we'll vape the Eviscerator's ties so you can waltz in and give it a dose of TRD. It would be my pleasure, Commander. But High Command is going to want a lot of questions asked and answered about Black Moon before more operations are conducted in that sector of space. A tone sounded at the door, but before Psalm could say anything, the door retracted, and Corin Horn rushed in, followed closely by an infantry lieutenant. Commander, you wouldn't believe... The enthused smile on Corin's face died as he saw Psalm. Both men snapped to attention. Begging the general's pardon. At ease, Lieutenant Page, Lieutenant Horn. Psalm clasped his own hands behind his back. What's the meaning of this? Corin's gaze darted back and forth from Wedge to Psalm. M'Tray just said Commander Antilles was here, sir. He didn't mention these were your quarters, sir. Psalm looked at Wedge. Your officers barge into your quarters uninvited? Not so far. Perhaps, General Psalm, I need to institute some of the discipline you were speaking about earlier. Wedge stood and gave Corin a hard stare. News of our compatriots in the medical unit? No, sir. Wedge could see Corin was fit to burst. This had better be good, Mr. Horn. Yes, sir. Corin looked at Psalm. With the General's permission? Psalm nodded. Proceed. Corin's smile blossomed again. If we want Black Moon, we've got it. What? The junior officer nodded. Whistler, my astromech, collected a lot of data while we were out there, and has been running it through the programs he used to analyze smugglers' bases so Corsec knew where to hit them. Psalm's face hardened. This is an Imperial base, not some bandit's hideout. Page shook his head.
Begging your pardon, sir, but the droid found a lot of parallels to smugglers' bases, and that gives us some new options. Whistler also pinpointed Black Moon from a star chart and is pulling up more data than we were given in our briefings. It can fall. Wedge shook his head. Good work, gentlemen. But there's an Imperial Star Destroyer Mark II we have to figure into the scenario. That changes everything. Psalm held a hand up.
Perhaps not, Commander.
No?
Not entirely.
Psalm folded his arms.
Who knows about this information you have?
Horn thought for a second, then answered.
As nearly as I know, just Page, my R2, the unit's 3PO, and me.
I want you to confirm that. You two are hereby sworn to secrecy. If any word about this gets out, I'll have you flying solo missions against Sea Rook strongholds. Got it?
Yes, sir.
Wedge smiled. Being a bit lenient there, aren't you, sir?
Perhaps I am, but I think they know I'm serious.
Psalm smiled confidently.
Let's see what you have, gentlemen. Black Moon was picked as our best, closest step to Coruscant yet. No reason we should abandon our quest if we don't have to.
28. Kirtan Lore raised a hand to ward off the dust storm raised by the shuttle's landing jets. The Sepharium settled down easily, its landing lights strobing brightly in the Borleosian evening. The hum of the engines filled the air, drowning out the sound of the gangway being lowered from the belly of the ship. The intelligence agent smiled at General Derricote as the base's commander crested the stairs to the landing platform.
Come to see me off. I'm honored.
Derricote returned the smile.
Your visit was not as onerous as you might imagine, Agent Lore.
The older man held a bottle out to him.
A memento of your visit.
Kirtan took it.
Carrarian whiskey. Wyrin's Reserve, no less.
He looked closely at the cap and at the holographic tax seal.
It looks genuine, is it? Or have you prepared this so I can poison myself and eliminate a problem for you?
Derricote opened his hands.
If you want to open it and lum-guzzle, I'll join you. It is genuine and quite costly, but I have connections that make it possible for me to obtain it. It's not poisoned, because it is given by way of thanking you. Had you not come here, the rebels might have taken me by surprise. I think the result would have been much the same as it actually turned out to be, but one can never know. Your use of influence to transfer a squadron of TIE fighters from the Eviscerator until my fighters can be replaced was also appreciated.
The general's openness surprised Kirtan.
You do not feel my being ordered back to Imperial Center is a threat to your operation here?
Derricote shrugged.
I am too much a realist to imagine I could keep this operation secret forever. I trust you will use your knowledge of it to your own gain, which means I will not be sacrificed casually. This operation, of course, has uses. I would think that Hassan Izzard would find it more valuable than any object lesson she could provide others by destroying it and me.
The man's eyes hardened.
Besides, if I saw you as a threat, you would have died during the rebel attack.
Truly spoken.
Kirtan nodded slowly.
I accept your gift in the spirit in which it is given. But I will have it tested before I drink.
I hope also you will view this invitation in the spirit in which it is given.
Derricote spread his arms wide to encompass the planet.
The Empire is dead. What will rise to replace it, I don't know. But the core will be heating up, and Imperial Center is going to be roasted alive. Rebels, warlords, either could do the job. Old Borleas here, it's been through its time of fire. I'll be here when Imperial Center isn't. If you need a haven when things break apart, remember that I'm here.
Kirtan brought his head up.
Thank you, General. I shall remember you. I hope I won't have to avail myself of your invitation. But if I do, I know where to find you.
Have a good trip to Imperial Center, Agent Lore.
Kirtan raised the bottle in a salute.
Until we meet again.
Wedge felt a giddy anticipation in his belly, the like of which he'd not known since Endor. He glanced over at General Salm. The man sat on the other side of the briefing table with his eyes closed, nodding to himself as he rehearsed what he would say to Admiral Akbar. The plan they'd concocted over the last week could work, but it was risky and highly time-dependent. The door to the briefing room opened, and Akbar entered the room. He nodded to both men, then settled down in the chair at the head of the oval table.
What have you woven together?
Psalm smiled and punched keys on his datapad. The small device fed information to the holographic projection disc in the center of the table, and a star field began to sparkle and slowly spin above it.
We've found a way to take Black Moon.
The Mon Calamari sat back.
I do not recall your having been told which world Black Moon was.
Wedge shook his head. We weren't. As per orders, coordinates were downloaded to and erased from all of our astromechs and navigational computers before and after the operation. Unfortunately for operational security, one of my unit's astromechs has a special criminal investigation and forensic circuitry package. It gathers evidence, and in this case, included a star chart of the area in it. Akbar's Barabels quivered.
Something will have to be done to correct that situation.
Agreed, Admiral. But this droid in Commander Antilles' squadron has provided us with invaluable information that points out why we lost the fight and how we can take Borlaeus.
And more, sir. Wedge pointed at the starfield. Computer, isolate the triad. The starfield grew, and stars bled out of the edges of the image. In the center, three stars intensified in radiance, and faint green lines stretched out to link them. A small arrow pointed down and away from the lowest point of the triangle, indicating the direction of the core and Coruscant. These three systems are, in descending order, Mirit, Venjaga, and Pyrea. The center one, Venjaga, is home to the Eviscerator. It is using Jaga 2 as a base, and is there to protect the concussion missile production facilities. While the output is considered small by Imperial standards, the fact that the world is actually producing missiles makes it worth protecting. Psalm indicated the uppermost system, the one on a virtual straight line with Borlaeus.
The Mirit system is home to Ord Mirit. The Empire abandoned that base shortly after Endor and shifted their garrison all the way over to Corellia to help hold the shipyards there. Ord Mirit is really too far away from anything substantial for us to use it as a base, as we have done with Ord Pardrin. Still, it is part of the sector the Eviscerator is tasked to defend. Finally, we have Borlaeus.
Psalm hit a button on his datapad, and the starfield dissolved into the image of the planet.
When we were there before, we discovered the estimates of power generation for the planet were low by at least half, and two squadrons of fighters, interceptors no less, showed up without warning. All of the data we had about the planet had been stolen from Imperial files by Bothan slicers. Unfortunately for us, that information was incomplete.
Wedge nodded. We went back and pulled old data files on Borlaeus, and they provided the answers to questions that were never asked before the first operation. Back before the Empire existed, Alderaan Biotics set up a research facility on the far side of the planet. It included a geothermal generation station and a local spaceport. Because everything was located in the northern part of the planet, the facilities were built underground to avoid complications from the harsh winters. A series of scan surveys of the planet would be required to locate the sites from space.
What Commander Antilles says is true, sir. And the effort to locate these bases from space would have revealed our interest in the planet to the Empire.
The Mon Calamari acknowledged Psalm's comment with a nod.
Why was there no information about this place in the Imperial files, General?
The facility was shut down years ago. We suspect that the current base commander, Evir Derricote, refurbished it and has it operating to produce goods, foodstuffs mostly, that are sold to the refugee Alderaanan population via the black market. At the very least, his Imperial supervisors would see this as giving aid and comfort to the enemy. So hiding knowledge of it from them makes sense.
So you suspect this facility and its generator was the source of the power used to reinforce the base's shields?
Yes, sir. Wedge pointed to a faint red line linking the military base and the biotics facility. A tunnel that runs about 1.25 kilometers beneath the surface of the planet links the two facilities. There is a rift valley where a ferrocrete conduit links the tunnel one side to the other. This is the weak link. The generator is too deep to blow with proton torpedoes, and destroying it makes no sense if we intend to take the planet. Akbar nodded, then tapped his lower lip with a flipper-like hand.
If you sever the connection with the military base, you bring us back to the original Bothan estimates of the defenses. If we bring our ships back in, we should be able to bring the shields down as we did before. We could take the base, but then the Eviscerator would come and destroy it.
Psalm shook his head.
Not if the Eviscerator arrives too late. Our plan is this. We stage a feint at Jaga 2. The Emancipator and the Liberator arrive in system, just at the outer edge of the gravity well created by the seventh planet, a gas giant. They deploy my Defender wing and another wing of fighters, matching the Eviscerator's complement of TIEs. The Eviscerator will deploy its fighters and move out behind their screen to engage our ships. Even at full speed, it will require 2 hours for our ships to engage each other. Our snubs won't be traveling at full speed, and our Star Destroyers will be pulling back. It will appear to the Eviscerator that we're running from it, or, at the very least, are reluctant to engage it. When the Eviscerator moves into position within the system to engage us, our ships will go to light speed. The Star Destroyers will head for Ord Mirit, while the fighters will head for Borlaeus. The Eviscerator will be unable to follow our destroyers immediately because of its position in the system and the presence of planets that act as natural interdictor cruisers. Akbar's eyes half shut.
Then the Eviscerator goes to Borlaeus.
Without her fighters?
Psalm shook his head.
The TIEs cannot enter hyperspace by themselves the way our fighters can. They will have to be recovered, and that will take time. Borlaeus can take care of itself, and the feint at the Venjaga system will be obviously intended to keep the Eviscerator away from Ord Mirit.
The Admiral gave Psalm a wall-eyed stare.
Why would the captain of the Eviscerator believe there was anything of value at Ord Mirit?
Wedge smiled. We were thinking that there are some Bothan slicers who seriously want to redeem themselves. We want them to plant information in Imperial networks that suggest a newly discovered, previously secret facility on Ord Mirit may possess the key to finding the Katana fleet. He felt a shiver run down his spine as he saw the effect of his words on Akbar. The Katana fleet had once been real enough, but back before even the Clone Wars, it had passed into legend. Over 100 ships that were slave-circuited together, the fleet had jumped into hyperspace and had never been seen again. With the Empire crumbling, possession of that fleet would make its owner the power in the galaxy. If the Alliance found it, the New Republic would become invincible. If an Imperial officer found it, a new Emperor would be born.
No sane officer could truly believe the Katana fleet could be found.
Akbar's mouth gaped open in a grin.
Ha! But no sane officer could refuse to take the chance that it could be found. The Eviscerator would have to go to Ord Mirit. And Ord Mirit is what? 12 hours at flank speed to Borlaeus?
Add the 4 from Venjaga to Ord Mirit, and we have 16 hours at the very least to take Borlaeus. Wedge nodded solemnly. The beginning of the raid on Borlaeus will be very simple. Rogue Squadron goes in and blows the conduit. Going in and coming out, we expect to attract a lot of attention, because while we're fighting, Lieutenant Page and his commandos, as well as a number of similar units, are going to use the conduit to get into the Borlaeus base and disable it. They'll also hit the Biotic Station spaceport. If they do it right, the TIE pilots sent up to engage us won't know there's been a change in ownership until they come home.
Once the commandos are down and in, my people head out home. The arrival of my defender wing and the other fighters from Benjaga will provide the Borlaeus base with enough of a distraction that Page's people can take things down in short order, without having to damage anything we'll need to use to defend the base. Akbar's barabels twitched.
Security will need to be very tight for this return to Black Moon.
Yes, sir, but we have some advantages here. Derricote won't think we'll be coming back because the moon is in position to block our escape route. We are preparing a simulator package that hides the identity of our target. The run across the lunar surface will be disguised as a run through an asteroid belt, leading our people to believe we're moving against a ringed planet. Wedge smiled. This time our pilots will not know where they're going, but they won't be in the dark about what they will face when they get there. The Mon Calamari nodded.
You will have to hide your location from your XO.
I know. So does he. He's not part of the operation, so he accepts not knowing. The Mon Calamari stood slowly.
I think this plan is a good one, and can be made better. I do have one concern, however. It concerns your rogue squadron, Commander Antilles, and the commandos.
Sir?
If the operations are launched simultaneously, and I must assume they will be, so an alarm raised by the Eviscerator will not put Borlaeus in a heightened state of alert in time to disrupt your effort, there will be at least 4 hours before we have more forces arriving at Borlaeus. Flight suit life support lasts for 3 hours. Anyone left behind will die.
I know that, sir.
Do your people know that?
Wedge shook his head. They will before they go. I've got 6 operational ships. This will be a volunteer mission.
And a very bold one.
Admiral Akbar nodded solemnly.
Let us go over it again, and guarantee the gain will be worth the likely cost. Right now, I believe I could sell it to the Provisional Council, but some modifications will make this a certainty. And if things go well, the way to Coruscant will finally lie open to us.
29. Corin half hid his face behind his left hand, daring only to stare at the floating hologram of the mythical world of Feneru Prime with his left eye. Aside from the addition of an asteroid ring, an ocean where the southern continent was, and some adjustments to the coastlines, it looked exactly like Borlaeus. The computer-projected world slowly spun above the cylinder in the well of the pilot's briefing room. It looked calm and almost peaceful, especially without the air current overlays Whistler used to project onto it.
As peaceful as it looks, it's not where I want to die.
Wedge continued his briefing. Our objective is a ferrocrete pipe, roughly 4 meters in diameter and 40 meters long. It's reinforced and has suspension cables helping to support the weight. A single proton torpedo should be able to destroy it, but we're not sure how well it's going to show up on the targeting computers. If we get a lock, it's likely to be at point-blank range. Nawara Venn stroked the tip of one of his brain tails.
Run up this rift valley and hit something the third of a size of an X-wing without the benefit of a targeting computer? That's impossible.
Gavin shook his head.
That's nothing. Back home in Beggar's Canyon?
The youth's voice trailed off as Wedge raised an eyebrow in his direction. I don't think any pilot from Tatooine ever found a mission tough, especially when it involves racing through a canyon.
Well, the target's not really that small, sir.
Corin laughed.
It is the size of a reclining hut, give or take a couple of meters. The conduit can probably move faster, too.
Even Wedge laughed at the comment. But Corin knew it wasn't because of the weak humor in his statement. Everyone in the room, the 9 surviving pilots from Rogue Squadron and Tycho Selchu,
knew the mission being presented to them was difficult. Their laughter came from the nervous tension of staring death in the face and knowing death was likely to win this one. The real sticking point on this mission, people, is time over target. We'll be coming in and using a meteor shower as cover for our insertion to the atmosphere. This means we'll have to maneuver through the asteroids to get into Fenaru and get out again. We also have a long run up to light speed so we can make the jump out of the gravity well. All this means we've got a half hour over the target. If we burn too much time and fuel fighting, we don't get out. Broer Jace scratched at the pale stubble on his chin. That's cutting it rather fine, isn't it? The valley run should take a third of that. If only six of us are going in, that's one pass per flight element.
He's right, Commander.
Rossetti frowned.
Can't we get auxiliary fuel pods for our T-65s?
Wedge glanced over to where M. Trey stood. Last check of our inventory didn't show we had any, and a check of the Alliance requisition system shows a backlog of requests. That's what you said, wasn't it, M. Trey?
Yes, sir.
The droid raised a hand and tilted his head to the side.
However, sir, we now have some.
What? Wedge frowned. I thought you characterized requisitioning them as an exercise in futility.
I did, sir.
The droid shrugged in a most unmechanical manner by bobbing his head up and down on his neck.
I saw we needed them, so I scrounged them.
Scrounge?
They cost a couple suits of the stormtrooper armor we had left over from Talassia, the cold weather gear we are not using here on Noquivzor, and some spare parts for which we have little use.
The squadron's commander stared at the droid for a moment. How many did you get?
A half dozen.
Wedge shook his head. All that only got you six auxiliary fuel pots?
Sir, when scrounging merchandise, you can get it fast, in good condition, or cheap. Pick two.
The droid's clamshell head righted itself again.
They're here, and Zry is ready to fit them on ships. He's fitting them with a quick release, so you can jettison them when they're empty. It'll kill the drag when you're fighting the squints. These pods give you half again the time over target.
45 minutes sounded like forever, and in some ways it was. In atmosphere, the engines gobbled a lot more fuel than they did in space because of the friction and drag. X-Wings were a better fighter in atmosphere than TIEs, but the two squadrons on the ground outnumbered the Rogues 4-1. Long odds, and we ran through the last of our luck on the previous visit to Black Moon. Rossetti raised a hand.
Any defenses in the Rift Valley?
Wedge shook his head. None that we know of, but it's possible there are some. Whoever goes in first has got to be careful. First run probably won't nail the prize.
I can believe that.
Corrin scratched at the back of his neck.
Are Page's folks coming down while we make our runs?
If they were, Lieutenant, the answer to that question would be classified. Wedge hesitated for a moment, then nodded. It's a logical assumption to make, though. Regardless, any of us who gets left behind will be in severe straits, out of fuel and out of luck, long before the assault for which we're doing the prep work will hit.
Poor Jay slowly nodded. This is a suicide mission.
No. I want it to be anything but a suicide mission. The facts do point to this being very dangerous. Wedge folded his hands together. We've got six ships and eight pilots. I'm sorry, Orl, but without a proper prosthetic fit, I can't consider you healthy enough for this mission. Corrin's wingmate sagged a bit in his seat. The MD droids had fitted him with an odd device that capped his stub with what looked and smelled like a boiling pot of bacta. Below it, a rudimentary prosthetic arm ended in a pair of pincers that snapped open and closed.
Quirk offers apologies for Quirk's failure.
Your feelings are understood, Oral. Wedge folded his arms across his chest. Three of you are fit to fly, but you don't have a ship. We do have Lujain's X-Wing ready to go. If all of you volunteer for this mission, I'll choose one of you at random to fly that ship. If anyone else opts out, you're up. Do you all want to go? All three of the pilots nodded. M-Tray, randomize a choice here.
The droid hummed for a moment.
Nawara, Ven.
Sheel growled, and Arisi shrugged in Rasati's direction.
Wedge smiled.
Welcome aboard, Mr. Ven. You'll fly with Mr. Jace, assuming he volunteers.
The Thyferin shot a quick glance at Arisi, then nodded.
It shall be my pleasure to bring glory to the Thyferin people as their representative on this mission.
Mr. Darklighter, this isn't Beggar's Canyon.
I know, sir. It's bigger. And this won't be for fun.
Gavin smiled slowly.
I'm in.
Wedge looked over at Rasati.
And you, Miss Ener?
Someone has to break up the boys' club.
Wedge turned to Corin.
Need I ask?
You want to know if I'm willing to fly to an enemy-held planet where I'm to race through some eroded ditch and pop a sewer pipe with a proton torpedo while interceptors are swarming around? And do all this with no hope of rescue if I slip up?
Wedge's reply came cold and calm.
That's what I want to know.
Corin's mouth soured, and his stomach tightened. Despite Gavin's protest, Nawara Ven had been correct. The mission was impossible. Performing any one of the feats mentioned might have been possible, but doing them all would push every pilot to his or her limit.
Failure by some was inevitable.
Only who and how many were in question.
They all knew that. They knew it as well as he did. Yet each one of them had volunteered, without a second thought. The mission needed doing. And they were going to do it. It wasn't a question of survival, but a question of how best to make certain the mission succeeded. Each of them decided they were up to the task, and now it was up to him to come to the same conclusion.
Overwhelming odds, tough target, scant chance of survival. Business as usual for Rogue Squadron.